What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Farzy Show, presented by Stephen Singer Jewelers. My name is Mark Farzetta, and I just want to say this top of the show. Producer Jim Hyden had a birthday yesterday. Happy birthday there, PJ. Very secretive, you and I, very secretive about our birthdays, but happy birthday to you, my friend. I did officially wish him a happy birthday yesterday when I saw a bunch of people that apparently are smarter than me know that it was his birthday, but happy birthday there, PJ. I know all I did was work all day anyway, but hope you enjoyed the work, I guess. But welcome into the program. Here's what we got today. We got a Phillies recap with my man Corey Seidman. He joins the program coming up in just a couple of minutes when we talk about all things Phillies. What happens now? Where do we go from here? Final reactions to this World Series run, including what happens to Rhys Hoskins? Because my gut feeling on all this, as I mentioned yesterday, Rhys Hoskins is back. Rhys Hoskins will be your opening day first baseman next year. That is my gut feeling, hunch, educated guess on how all of this plays out. I know some people took a look at maybe Anthony Rizzo moving on from the Yankees. He's going to test the waters again in free agency, 33 years old. I know he's a first baseman who's a gold glover that a lot of people look at and go, oh, right there. That's the guy. I don't see that happening. Corey Seidman brings up an interesting point as to whether or not Bryce Harper gets surgery, whether or not he's going to be ready come opening day. If he does play in the field a lot more next year, well, then guess what? You'll have an opportunity for Rhys Hoskins to be your designated hitter as opposed to your first baseman. I know a lot of people just want the Phillies to move on from Rhys Hoskins anyway. No matter what, forget about DH. They just don't want to see him in a Phillies uniform anymore. I just don't think that's the route the Phillies go. So, we'll also talk about the Phillies having Aaron Nola opt in to his $16 million player option for the following year, including the club option for the following year. This upcoming season, Zach Eflin has opted out of the mutual option, and he will test the waters in free agency and Gene Segura team option. Thanks, but no thanks. They decline his team option for the 2023 season. So that leaves a lot to talk about with my man Corey Seidman. 76ers! Back of the hardwood last night as they took care of business against the Phoenix Suns, top team of the Western Conference. Joel Embiid makes his return, had a great quote, and it's what I was thinking anyway, but Joel Embiid, after a 33-point performance, and by the way, 37 minutes logged, we'll take a look at the box score in a second, but comes back to play in this game after having the flu, after dealing with a little bit of an injury, comes out and plays there 37 minutes, 33 points, does start to get drained as the game went on. Doc Rivers talked about that. We'll hear from Doc and coming up in just a couple of minutes. But Joel Embiid said it after the game, and I was thinking it anyway. The Phillies season's over, so now it's extra focus on the 76ers. Phillies season's over. Sixers season starts right now. That's what Joel Embiid said after the game. Still fighting that cold, by the way. So I appreciate you guys joining me in. Watching me stick it out through all of this. But Joel Embiid said after the game, I think a very true statement, which is the focus now shifts to them. Eagles, hey, they got press conferences 6 days a week. They got a game once a week. Sixers are going to be playing like three times a week. We're going to be focusing on the Sixers for the vast majority of that time. And we want to see what they can do before the year turns to get serious in 2023. See where the positioning is lined up for this team. Then we start talking about the trade deadline and all that great stuff. But last night, let's start it off with those 76ers because he did have Joel Embiid back and you were facing the top team in the Western Conference and you managed to jump out to a huge lead in this game. You opened it up to a 19-point lead in that first half. And midway through the first half, when you were up 16 points, Chris Paul has to leave the game due to injury. Sixers from that point on, you think, would have just dominated. That wasn't the case. They end up losing that lead. They pull, and they allow the game to get even tighter. And then in that third quarter, you start to sweat a little bit. And then in the fourth quarter, you go through a three-minute period without a field goal. And I love it. I absolutely love it. Kate Scott, bang, bang, George Niang. 7 threes in the game last night, tying a career high. And really, throughout this game, despite the fact that my man was looking a little tired, Joel Embiid just looked like his old self. If watching this game last night, and there have been games, as I've pointed out, or the early goings of the season, where Joel Embiid has not looked himself. he's looked like a guy who had to play his way into shape. And I talked about it on a, I believe it was a Friday show that I talked about it. And shortly thereafter, maybe a couple hours later, during a Sixers practice, Doc Rivers reveals that Joel Embiid had plantar fasciitis in the offseason and it affected his conditioning. Okay, fine. Joel Embiid did not look like he was in shape, did not look like he was ready to go. There's a decent reason why, to say the least, and he didn't look so good. Last night, after missing time with the flu, he comes back, and he looks great. Gets the first bucket into the game, was going up against a pretty damn good center in DeAndre Ayton, and he goes out there and he drops 33 points. And he looked good from start to finish. He didn't look like he was all full of energy by that fourth quarter, but in terms of seeing him do what he does in a game, whether it's hit threes, whether it's take 10-foot jumpers, whether it's go to the rim hard and try to slam it down and get rebounds, he did all that for you last night. And the Sixers, I'll just say this. I know I needed to see that from the Sixers last night. Here's take a look right now at that box score for the Sixers, see what they were up to. One thing that I thought was interesting is that Matisse Thybulle, again, 10-plus minutes in the game for him last night. That's what he logged. A good game from Tobias Harris. He was very aggressive in this. Got you 21 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists. How about that? And 33-10 for Joel Embiid as he notches the double-double. Tyrese Maxey, not his best night. 4 of 18 shooting, 0 for 4 from beyond the arc. He just had 11 points, and then there's George Niang. All 7 of his field goals were threes, and every one of his 21 points off the bench came via the three-pointer. That's how the math works. But the most comforting thing for me, it's not to just look at the box score. I want to give you that so you have information there. But it's not just the fact that they were able to do what they did statistically. It's the eye test to go back to it. Joel Embiid, for me, needed to pass an eye test this year. He played great against the Bulls, was clutch against the Bulls, and that was awesome. But coming back from the flu, I needed to see that full energy game. I got very close to it. And I'll give him an A+, despite the fact that the fourth quarter was a little tough in the fourth quarter. But despite that, you saw a guy that was out there doing much more than what I expected him to do coming back from the flu. So it was great to see that last night. And then Doc Rivers, after the game, evaluated Joel Embiid's performance, and here's what he had to say.
So what did you think of Joel's return? How do you think he looked?
I thought he looked good. I mean, he was, we literally told him, when you're tired, signal, come out. When you're fresh, get up and come in. The only time I put him in was that last stretch because they weren't going to make a run and we needed them on the floor. So I thought he was great. You could see early on, I thought he got better as the game went on. But down the stretch, he was gas.
Certainly looked like that to me as well. Now, there's an interesting thing that happened this, and this is away from Joel Embiid. So Chris Paul goes down with about 6:30 left in the second quarter. maybe 30 seconds. So they stop the game. He goes out. Stop the game. About 30 seconds later, ref's running down the sideline there, and he's running right in front of the Sixers. And some fan has his legs stretched out and trips the referee. Referee goes on a little tumble. Upon further review, that fan was Meek Mill. Meek Mill tripped up the referee during last night's basketball game. This is a fun little thing to point out in last night's game. Ref was fine, got up, and he continued to play because he's a ref and he's tough. And then finally this, I am hardly in the mindset of when you're struggling, keep shooting. I have never agreed with that mindset in basketball. There are people like a JJ Redick that like, that's what you're on the floor for. So keep shooting. And that's what he did throughout his entire career. Even the nights you're struggling, you keep shooting. Tyrese Maxey, for me, it doesn't come down to shooting a bunch of threes. He shot 4 last night. He didn't hit one of them. That's fine. Watching the game, he just kind of looked out of sync. He looked out of rhythm. For Maxey, I don't think that type of philosophy applies in terms of the unconscious shooter, the guy that plays without a conscience. Just keeps on going, the next one's going in. Maxey's game can be so old school, and he has that gear about him that I want to continue to see throughout his career. And the gear is this. he keeps attacking the rim like you used to see all the time in the 90s. I know when people talk about the 90s, they always talk about back to the basket centers and all that stuff. No, I'm talking about a guard that will penetrate, get to the rim, get fouled, get the N1 opportunity. And that's how Tyrese Maxey plays a lot of his game. And when he goes into that gear of just being aggressive and attacking the rim, that I think is the best version of Tyrese Maxey. Sure. Hey, if he's going to shoot 3 for 7 from beyond the arc, whatever it might be throughout his career, that's great too. But the idea that that shot's not falling for him and he keeps driving the lane, he keeps trying to get contact, he keeps trying to go to the line, that's ultimately a great way for him to play because he has both options. If he's out from beyond the arc, which we've seen him at, he can continue to do that. If it's not there like it wasn't last night, you could see him continue to be aggressive. I think the end one part of the game is something that I miss just ridiculously because I love that style of basketball. And yeah, this is exciting and everyone's shooting threes all the time. That's right. I understand the new thing, but it's fine. But the end one opportunity I think is great where you can get to get the one and then you also put somebody else possibly in foul trouble and they can't play anymore. Yeah. Okay. I like that too. I like that a lot. And Tyrese Maxey can bring both options to the floor. Last night, I thought was a good example of him continuously attacking the basket. And that's something that I think I want to see from him more and more as his season goes on. Something else stuck out to me in last night's game is how great you look when you just make shots. A lot of stuff we'll talk about. Doc Rivers drawing up a last-second play in a game that doesn't work out, and you miss the shot, and maybe it wasn't the best look, but you make the shot, and it looks fine. You make your shots, you're going to look good. George Niang last night, I think, really helped everybody look good. And there's no better example of it than the Sixers going on that drought for 3 minutes in the second half, and all of a sudden George Niang just steps up and says, I got another one for you, to the point where Monty Williams has to come out after the game and say, oh, George Niang, yeah, probably should have covered him. We really didn't take him too serious. We didn't give him enough respect. We gave him too much room, too much. We were too lenient on George Niang, and he made us pay for it. Well, beep, beep, the minivan's coming through, baby. Monty acknowledging that after the game, I thought was really interesting. So Sixers handled their business last night, 100-88 victory over the Phoenix Suns. They get their 5th win of the year. They're one game under 500 to this point. Here's another thing with the Sixers. They have 2 days off. So all the more time for Joel Embiid to recover. They got a 7:30 tip-off in Atlanta against the Hawks coming up on Thursday night. So that's what you got right there. I have made and banged the drum for Trey Turner since I heard about Bryce Harper saying he was his favorite player. Trey Turner, I think, without question, is going into free agency. I think it's a real free agency. I don't think it's just show. And it's, look, whatever it might be, he could just be trying to drum up the price for the Dodgers to return to the Dodgers. And I understand that. I get that. Fine. But if it's not, then this, I think, is a great fit for him here in Philadelphia. The Philadelphia Phillies need a 1 or 2 hitter. I know everyone loves Kyle Schwarber and 46 home runs, and I love it too. But damn, I would really love people on base for that kind of power. And I know he takes great at bees. He strikes out a lot, though. But if you can get Trey Turner to bat 1 or 2 in this lineup for the Phillies, whatever you got to do, John Middleton, to make that happen, just please make that happen. So what does Trey Turner do? I guess he feels like he hasn't done enough to catch the attention of Major League Baseball teams. So apparently, according to Jeff Passan, Trey Turner put out a 2-minute and 30-second sizzle reel, essentially a highlight and hype reel. Now, I say hype reel because it's not just highlights of Trey Turner. It's a hype reel, and it's narrated by John Hamm, Mad Men's own John Hamm, the devastatingly handsome John Hamm, the current Santa in many commercials to which you see. John Hamm narrates it, and there's two lines that step out, that really jump out to me. And I thought they were brilliant lines. Whoever wrote this, I doubt it was Trey Turner, but if it was, good hustle to you, my friend. Trey Turner this year had three different 20-game hitting streaks. All right? That's pretty impressive. They follow that stat with the line, and this is from John Hamm, "This guy is as close to slump-proof as it gets." And I just was like, that's okay. I like that. And it's true. It's true. And then the other line he had was, Trey Turner is very much known, I mean, aside from being a good ball player, the slide, where he just looks like he was gliding on air as he crossed home plate, right? It was the coolest slide in the world against the Phils, if I'm not mistaken. Excuse me. And the line in the sizzle reel is, it looks effortless, but it's really efficient athleticism. And it got me thinking, Mike Schmidt, like, his prime was before my time, really. And Mike Schmidt, what I hear from a lot of people that watch Mike Schmidt and what they tell me all the time about Mike Schmidt is that, oh, Schmidt, you know, he wouldn't die for as many balls as you'd think because he was so good on his feet. He was so quick. He didn't need to do that. So people always thought he wasn't trying really hard. He wasn't working really hard, but he was just that good. And my generation, you know who that was? That was Bobby Abreu. Oh, Bobby's so good. I used to hear that all the time from like Larry Boa. Oh, Bobby's great. He just gets the ball so easy. He doesn't look like the guy that's going to be diving all over the place for this. And I'm like, regardless of if you're lightning fast or not, regardless if you're as fluid and as smooth as a ballerina, there's going to be that one ball that's hit just out of your reach that you got to lay out for. And they didn't, Bobby didn't do that. I can't tell you about Mike Schmidt. I didn't experience the prime, but I experienced the prime of Bobby Abreu. And I'm saying, a dive or two would have been nice. Hit it crashing into the wall, it would have been nice. But that line right there, it looks effortless, but it's really efficient athleticism. I thought, all right, let's bring him here, see how that works. But if I'm the Phillies, I'm going all in on Trey Turner. And as Corey Simon will explain, coming up in just a minute, it's possible. It's possible you get that man at the top of this lineup. I get a lot of people excited for the upcoming season. A World Series, two wins short of winning a World Series, Trey Turner. See how much better we can be. And I do have confidence that a guy like Nick Castellanos isn't going to have another down year. Like 263 for him isn't horrible. But what, 14 home runs? What the hell did he have last year? That's terrible. That guy's got to swing with a lot more pop. You can't have him and Alec Boehm being like barely in the teens when it comes to home run. A little bit more pop, a little bit more sizzle from those guys. And you're in a much better standing going into the next season. So that's well played right there. All right. Let's get to Corey. Want to get a reaction from him on the season and see where the team's going from here. But first, let me tell you about Steven Singer of Steven Singer Jewelers. One place, one price, the perfect price. Each and every day online at IHateStevenSinger.com. That's IHateStevenSinger.com. For over 40 years, Steven's been in the love business in Philadelphia, helping people fall in love and get engaged. Steven likes to say that he's in the love business here in Philadelphia, and that's exactly what he does. With Ready for Love diamond engagement rings and treating every member like family. And how does he do that? He does it with the perfect price. Now, what's the perfect price? Other jewelers, they don't offer this. Instead, let's haggle. Let's negotiate. They put that pressure on you. And guess what? Even at the end of the day, they're still making out like bandits. Meanwhile, Steven Singer, you know what he's doing? I'll tell you what he's doing. He's giving you the perfect price. He doesn't mark things way up just to make you feel like, oh, when they come in here, they'll negotiate and haggle, and I'll still win in the end. No, you get the perfect price. You get treated with respect. You get treated like a family member. And you do that by a real jewelry expert at Steven Singer Jewelers. One place, one price online at IHateStevenSinger.com. That's IHateStevenSinger.com. Steven Singer Jewelers. Everything at the perfect price. Always fast and free shipping at IHateStevenSinger.com. Without further ado, let's talk to my friend. Now, I want to say we taped this yesterday at 3 o'clock. So the Segura news wasn't out yet. The Nola news was not out yet. I don't believe it was. No, I don't think it was at the time. And although we were expecting him to come back anyway, but he's got an interesting thing on Eflin. Segura's probably gone, leading most likely to the door being open for Trey Turner to come here to Philadelphia. And without further ado, let's get to the Roth and Orthopedics guest line and talk to our friend Corey Simon of NBC Sports Philadelphia. the Rothman Orthopedics Guest Line from NBC Sports Philadelphia, Phillies Talk Podcast. Read all the stuff on the My Teams app at NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com. The great Corey Seidman. Corey, how are you, my friend?
I'm great, Mark. It's a beautiful day here in early November after the longest season in Phillies history.
Is that statistically accurate? It's the longest day, the longest season in Philly sports history? Extra games?
Well, November 5th, I believe that November 5th was the latest that a World Series game had ever been played, if not one day shy of it. But yeah, this thing just went on and on and on. I mean, you and I were talking that it felt like the regular season ended 6 months ago, just based on this team's trajectory, all the ups and downs and different storylines of this playoff run. I mean, you had guys at the beginning of the playoff run who were seen as heroes that went south. You had guys who were goats at the beginning that started producing toward the end. So this postseason run, it had it all except for a championship for the Phils.
Yeah, unfortunately. You know, that's interesting because, yeah, again, you and I were talking before I hit the old record button there. And one of the things you brought up was the idea of how long it was. And I said, wow, that's amazing. And I think what it was mainly perspective. Like when Rob Thompson, when they clinched the playoff spot, when he was in the dugout or was in the clubhouse, he said, hey, 13 more wins, guys. And everybody went nuts. And I went, that's adorable. You know, good for you. And I didn't have anything that'd go to the World Series. But it was like, oh, my God, they did beat the Cardinals. I thought they could. I thought they would. But they did. And then, okay, the Braves will beat the Phillies and that'll be that. But oh my God, they beat the Braves. And I was like, well, they'll get out destinied by another team of destiny in the Padres. And they're like, nope, beat them in, four games. And then they were five games. And then it was, of course, they're two wins shy of the World Series. So it felt like as expectations grew and they changed, it just made it seem a lot longer.
Yeah, well, you know, to kind of go through it. So once they got past the Cardinals, I thought they had a decent shot against the Braves because the thing that I kept pointing to was that over the last four seasons where the Braves had been winning division title after division title, the Phillies were only a game or two under 500 against the Braves over that entire span. So, you know, they had been a dominant team, but the Phillies went into that series knowing we can go toe-to-toe with these guys. We can win 3 out of 5. We can win 3 out of 4. And then once they got past the Braves, I didn't see the Padres as a really – you know, huge threat. I kind of looked at the Padres. If you remember all the way back, like in 08, when the Phillies ended up facing the Rays instead of that really good Red Sox team that a lot of people pointed to as maybe being better than the Rays. That's kind of the way I saw this NLCS, where the Phillies were up against the Padres as opposed to the Dodgers or the Mets, the far superior teams they could have faced just based on the way that the playoffs panned out. And then obviously they just dominated the Padres at home in that NLCS. Once they got to the World Series, I still didn't think that they were going to win. You know, the Astros were the better team on paper, and we certainly saw that play out. I thought the Astros had more pitching. I mean, the thing I kept saying is that they have like two – the Astros have two different starting rotations, really. They have like as many as 10 guys who would start in most teams' rotations, but that's just how deep they are that they didn't need them. Once the Phillies win game one, expectations change. Once they win game three the way they did – then, you know, I looked at the odds the following morning. Their odds to win the World Series at that point were right around the same as what the Astros were to begin the World Series. So at that point, you're thinking up 2-1 at home, two more home games. They're probably going to have a good shot at winning at least one more of these. Then I think that's when a lot of the city just really bought in, like, wow, this is going to happen. This is a team of destiny. But it reminded me again, I think, a lot of people that while there may be momentum within the course of a baseball game, like if you score, if you have a shutdown inning that can give you momentum within a game, it really doesn't translate day to day. It really doesn't. I mean, it just depends on the pitching staff of the team you're facing, because the Phillies had as much momentum as you could possibly want, homering 5 times, winning 7-0 in a real just beatdown of the Astros in game 3. And then Christian Javier completely shut them down in game 4. And that carried through the end of the series. The Phillies went 9-for-98 over the final 3.5 games of the World Series, hitting below 100. So there's a lot of things you can point to that went wrong. Obviously, the Zach Wheeler decision will be debated all offseason, but I think the bottom line is they didn't hit enough. You know, even if Wheeler stayed in that game, were they going to score more than one run? The Phillies just couldn't push enough across against that Astros bullpen.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's stay on that for a second, because I want to eventually close the book on this season and start looking ahead to next season. But Rob Thompson taking out Zach Wheeler, I agree. They didn't win this series because they didn't hit. They didn't hit, and their aces, other than Wheeler in that final game of the series in game 6, didn't deal. Nola didn't deal in his 2 starts, and of course, Wheeler didn't deal in his the second start of this series. The first start for him in the series in game 2. Would you, if you were sitting next to Rob Thompson and he says, hey, what do I do here? Do you say leave Wheeler in, or do you say go to Alvarez?
Yeah, I would have left
Alvarado. Alvarado. You would have left Wheeler in, okay.
I would have left Wheeler in that situation. I don't think it was second-guessing. I think like when Thompson came out to the mound at first, it didn't really dawn on me that a pitching change was going to be made. I was sitting in the press box at Minute Maid Park in Houston. Like, I didn't see Alvarado warming up from my vantage point. I didn't see that he was warming up. So he might have been shown on TV, but I didn't have access to that where I was. Wheeler was at 70 pitches, as we all know. He had been dealing. There really wasn't much hard contact. There was a ball that was hit up the middle in that inning that would have been a ground ball out if the infield was aligned slightly differently. I know that Thompson went to Alvarado all throughout the playoffs early in games, especially in the World Series, and that it worked in Game 1. You went to Alvarado in the middle of Game 1. You went to Suarez the next time that left-handed pocket came up when it was Alvarez, Bregman, Tucker again. But Wheeler was just, it looked to me like he was in control. The velocity was up. He was hitting, he was 98, 99 the first couple innings, maintaining the velocity around 97. Beyond that, the spin on his curveball was significantly up. Spin on his curveball and slider were both significantly up compared to the regular season, which you can track in real time now, which that tells me the guy was feeling it. He was healthy. He had two extra days of rest. He's the best pitcher on your staff. And while Alvarado has been so good for so long since being recalled from the minor leagues, he did stumble earlier in this series. You know, he is prone to bouts of wildness. There was a runner in scoring position where a wild pitch brings in a run. Alvarado is much more prone to throwing a wild pitch than Zach Wheeler is. I just think that all of, you know, for all those reasons, I would have kept Wheeler in there a couple more batters. However, I just do think that the thing that brings it all full circle and home for me is that, like, it really just all depends on how the pitcher performs in that situation. If Alvarado gets a double play ball, we're not talking about this. If in game one, if Alvarado doesn't do his job, then we're not talking about Rob Thompson pushing all the right buttons. So It kind of goes both ways. But I just think that in the end, the better team won. I do think, though, that it's fair to criticize the Zach Wheeler decision. And I think it's fair to criticize it for months and months. I will say, though, that, like, some people are framing it as like an analytics conversation. I don't think that's what this was. I think this was partially okay looking at this guy might be better with this pitch type against this hitter in this situation, but I think mostly it's guys following their instinct in the dugout. Rob Thompson following his instinct.
Yeah, the thing that got me was after the game, Rob Thompson's explanation was literally why I would have left Zach Wheeler in the game. After the game, he was like, well, I thought he still had his good stuff and he was looking good, but I just like the matchup. And it's like, hold on a second. Your ace pitcher that you literally gave 2 days extra rest to was looking good, and you thought, now's the time to make the change. That's the thing to me that just went, I'd rather you tell me. I just didn't like it. I didn't like the setup at all without telling me the part about how he still had his stuff. Cause that just reaffirmed for why I would leave him in the game.
Yeah. And JT Realmuto, his quote was, Zach had lightning bolts coming out of his arm tonight. He said it was the best fastball that he thought Wheeler had all season, the way he was commanding it, not even just the velocity, just going in and out with it. So yeah, you know, it's something that we're going to lament here for months. And at the end of the day, though, I mean, not that it matters. What matters is that the Phillies lost game six and all that, but it was promising to see that Wheeler, with all this this narrative swirling around him, oh, is the elbow okay? Is the knee okay? Is he hurt? He showed that he was in good shape in that last start. Unless it was just pure adrenaline, I mean, that should make the Phillies feel pretty good heading into this offseason. Hopefully we'll hear soon, whether there's anything he's going to change about his offseason program or needs to. But, you know, Wheeler and Nola, two humongous workloads again this season. You wanted more out of Nola in the World Series, no doubt. He would have been in line to pitch in Game 7 because if the Phillies would have won Game 6, it would have involved Ranger Suarez in some way, so you would have seen Nola in Game 7. But those two guys, you know, they really helped the Phillies throughout October into November. But if the Phillies got slightly more out of Nola, if they got slightly more out of a lot of different guys on the roster, series turns out differently. And obviously, that Chaz McCormick play. If Chaz McCormick doesn't catch that ball, if it goes off the wall, if JT Realmuto hits a triple to lead off that inning, maybe the Phillies win game five, maybe everything changes, but game of inches, you know?
All right, last one, less controversial. Why was Kyle Schwarber bunting? Why did that happen? Why did that happen?
I don't know. The only thing I can think of is that at that point in the game, you're thinking that even if I hit a home run here, it doesn't necessarily matter. Just get on base. They're not playing me to bunt. They might be back. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, I went to the same thing, and then I went, but there's two strikes, there's two out, what's happening? Anyway, that's one I'll replay in my mind in that same type of delivery. Why? Anyway, you put out a tweet that, I'll be honest with you, Corey, it got me in the feels. It got me in the feels because it was it had sentimental value to it. I want to mention this, and I talked about it on yesterday's show, but it's a bottom line here is how will this team be remembered? And it's a difficult question. Because it wasn't like ultimately when the season started, this was some vast underdog team. And for the people on the podcast, here's the tweet. One of the wildest runs in Philly sports history is over. I wonder how this team will be remembered over time once the sting subsides. I love that you added that part. They were a team that went, well, you know, that went over the luxury tax, top payroll team type deal, you know, in the upper tier there. And they had guys that were supposed to mash in this lineup. They had two aces. Nola, obviously, a little bit of a question mark going into the season, but they were supposed to be a contending team. They obviously showed into the Joe Girardi era that they were not. Rob Thompson comes in. They're, what, 19 games over 500, and they show that they could be a contending team. I look at this team, and I say, hey, you know what? It took them a while to put it together, but they put it together, and then once they got in the playoffs, that's when they got hot, and they rode to a World Series. So ultimately, it will be a fond memory. How will you remember the 2022 Phillies, Corey Seibman?
Well, see, I agree that I can't look at them as an underdog because they had a gargantuan payroll, top five in all of baseball. However, I would, you know, just to counter that a little, I would say that even with the payroll coming into the season, if you rank the teams in the National League, people had the Dodgers and the Braves and maybe even the Mets. The Mets exceeded expectations this season, especially early. But like even with the payroll, the Phillies were not projected to win the most games in the NL. A lot of people were pegging them for like 88 to 92 wins, and they finished at 87. Obviously, it's the way you get there. When you enter a season, like the year the Phillies went 102-60 in 2011 and lost in the first round of the playoffs, they went into that year with such crazy high expectations that any time they lost a series, anytime they lost a game, it was like, what happened? How could this happen? You know, it wasn't the same way with this year's Philly. So in that regard, it was a wild, unexpected ride, even with the high payroll. I had just been thinking about that a lot in recent days. How's this team going to be remembered? Because, you know, I was 4 years old in 1993. So I was too young to really understand how that team just grabbed hold of the city and how everybody got like, just everybody felt like it was part of their extended family. Like I was a little too young to experience that, but I experienced the way that the city's talked about that team in the years since. And obviously that was a team of a bygone era, a lot of personalities in that clubhouse that could never exist in 2022. But I think that I personally think over time, people are going to remember this year fondly just because this all came out of nowhere. It was like, really, this came out of nowhere for the sports writers too. It's like a month later, we're covering a World Series when we thought a collapse might ensue when they were getting swept at Wrigley Field at the end of September. So it all just happened so fast and it was so dramatic. And there were so many big moments. Like, think if the Phillies did win the World Series, right? Think about the guy at the statues, right? Like, there would be a Schwarber Homer statue. There would probably be like a Hoskins bat slam mural somewhere in the city. You know, the Bryce Harper, of course. Like, the thing that I kept thinking when Bryce Harper would come up in these moments is like, of course Bryce Harper hits this homer to start this game or to end this game. So yeah, there were a lot of times it felt like a team of destiny and everybody got swept up in this. And while it ended two wins shy of a World Series, I think that this team will be, people will have smiles on their faces and like, you know, it really depends on how the rest of this era goes, I guess. Like if Bryce Harper still has what, eight years left on his contract here, yeah, or 7 years left on his contract. So if they win another one, I think it will increase the fondness of this team. If they don't, maybe people will just be saying, oh, you know, that was the closest it got and they never got as far again. But I just think like with the 09 team, right? Disappointed, yeah, because they didn't win. This thing, I don't think you can feel, I don't think there can be a feeling of disappointment for too long. At least, you know, it's been so many years really at this point since I could really feel the day-to-day feelings of a fan. But I feel like if I was still a fan after, you know, 3 days or so, I'd be thinking, wow, that was remarkable that happened. And it proved again that you never know what a team is capable of. Like a buddy of mine texted me at some point during the playoff run and he said, this is the only team that we'd be able to say this about potential championship team in Philly history that we could say a couple months ago, we were saying this team blows, you know. Really, like there were so many times throughout the year that people had that comment, you know.
Yeah.
You weren't saying that during the golden era, that 5-year sure. period.
So. Well, you know, because this is something that crossed my mind. If September wasn't as subpar as it was for this team, did that help bring us down to earth? Like after like red hot July, August, even, you know, June, did it help that did that wall of September and them dipping below and only being up what a half game at one point on the Brewers late in September? Did that help lower our expectations? And then all of a sudden they exceed the expectations and roll through the playoffs of the World Series.
Yeah, I think so, because they also lost some games to bad teams in that month of September. So yeah, there's also the thought like, oh, here we go again. They're playing down to their level of competition, but they just got hot enough when it mattered most. And you know, the thing that you know, Jim Salisbury, my coworker on the and co-host of the Phillies Talk podcast, what he said all throughout the month is it all began with Ryan Helsley not being able to throw a strike in the ninth inning of game one in St. Louis because the Phillies had been held scoreless for eight innings until that game. It's 2-0. If the Phillies lose that game, the playoff run might have lasted 2 days instead of a month.
It's insane. All right. I want to turn the page to the offseason a little bit because here we are in the offseason. By the way, of course, you and Jim do a great job with Phillies Talk podcast. You guys need to check that out as well. Rhys Hoskins, is he playing first base for the Phillies in 2023?
I would say like 60-40 yes. You know, there's a lot of factors to consider. So he is going into his final arbitration year. So if a team were to trade for him, they'd only be getting one guaranteed year of Rhys Hoskins. And you know, he's a quality offensive player. I mean, just if you look straight at the numbers, like his OPS is like 20% above the league average or so. When you compare it to his peers at first base, he's more of like a league average first baseman, I would say, all around, because you have to measure the offense, defense, and base running, all three of them. I wonder what I don't know what you could fetch for him on the trade market if you did trade him. It's one of those situations where I think what he'd be able to contribute to you is more than what you'd be able to bring back in a return. Another consideration is what happens with Bryce Harper. You know, if Bryce Harper, does he need surgery? Is he going to be able to play the field early next season? How long? If he can't, is he going to be DHing for the first couple months of the season? Because if Harper is not needed to be the everyday DH, that opens up more DH opportunity for Hoskins. So maybe you could sign a first, you know, another hitter who could play some first base, or, you know, there's a lot of different things that go into it. But I just think it comes down to, you don't make a trade unless you feel like it's a good trade. You know, you don't make a trade unless you feel like it's a good trade and you have somebody else who can step into that spot and produce as much, if not more. But, you know, there's no question the Phillies need more out of Hoskins among other guys in the World Series.
All right. Agree, disagree, whatever. I don't think Derek Hall is ready for an everyday first baseman role. Do you?
I don't know. I mean, they didn't play him at first base when he was here. You know, he DH'd. I think he might have only played a couple innings of first base in total, which told you that they didn't think he was a better defensive option than Hoskins. Mm-hmm. I think probably the best role for Derek Hall is what we saw him in this season. But then again, this is a guy who's been outperforming expectations really at every level of his career. So it wouldn't shock me if Derek Hall advances into something more than this.
Fair enough. Zach Eflin, testing the waters of free agency now. He's been granted his free agency. Do you think he'll come back to the Phillies eventually? I know it depends on what he's offered, but what does your gut tell you?
I could see him coming back. I mean, there's enough people in the organization that like him, and he has so many people in his organization that have had his back over the years and have seen what the best version of Zach Eflin looks like. Because over the years, we've seen what that is. The best version of Zach Eflin is a guy who can go seven innings, two runs in quick fashion, get a lot of ground balls, miss bats. He's gotten better. His repertoire has gotten better over the years. But obviously, he has not been able to stay healthy enough. This was a big year for him going into his walk year. If he had 30 starts under his belt, if he pitched 170-plus innings, he might be looking at like 4-plus years at $15 million-plus a year. You know, but instead, he's more of a candidate, I think, for a prove-it deal, like a one-year deal, maybe a higher AAV than usual. Maybe it's an incentive-based option for year two if based on how many innings or starts that he completes. I really think it's just going to depend on how his market shapes up. I could totally see him coming back to the Phillies on a short-term deal like that, but it only takes one team. If like the Minnesota Twins come out and say, you know, we'll give Zach Eflin 3 years, $39 million. Well, he might be stupid not to take that. So sure. I think there's a decent chance he comes back, but the Phillies have, whether he comes back or does not come back, the Phillies have multiple spots to address in the rotation because Syndergaard's also a free agent. Kyle Gibson also a free agent.
How about that Gene Segura fella, Clutch Gene? Is he back at second base next year?
I don't think so. The option, they haven't, as we sit down to do this, they haven't made a decision on the option yet, but it's not expected that they're going to pick it up. It's a pricey option. I think it's like $17 million or so. Segura has his strengths, and I do think that Gene Segura next year is going to hit 290-plus because they're getting rid of the shift. So Gene Segura is a guy who can spray the ball all around, can hit. There are a lot of times he hits a ball up the middle that gets gobbled up because a guy's playing behind the second base bag, and those are going to be hits next year. It's a lot of guys who are going to have higher batting averages, Kyle Schwarber included. But I see that as a position where the Phillies can really stand to upgrade. You know, you can put Bryson Stott at second base and sign Trey Turner or sign Xander Bogaerts or sign Carlos Correa. Some of these guys are the top free agents in the market. Trey Turner obviously has been connected to the Phillies for months at this point. Bryce Harper's made comments about the guy, former teammate in Washington. So I see that as a place where the Phillies can really upgrade. If, you know, Stott plays second base every day, you sign a shortstop. Gene Segura has there are benefits to having a guy like that on your team. But when you start to think, how can they push this forward? That's a spot they can.
Yeah, you talked about people using an analytical argument. This is the opposite of that. I just heard Bryce Harper on your network on NBC Sports Philly mentioned in the broadcast booth, well, Trey Turner's my favorite player. And right away, I went to JT Realmuto, and I was like, well, he's here now, and Harper loves him. So ifto facto, you got Trey Turner coming to Philly. Do you think that's – I'll use the word likely. Is it more likely than not that the Phillies pick up Trey Turner?
When you're up against the field, it's hard to say it's more likely than not, but I give him a decent chance. I mean, you start to look at, like, you know, everybody who does offseason predictions and rankings of free agents and where guys are going to end up next to Trey Turner's name. Everybody has the Phillies like the first or second team listed, you know, it's for good reason. It's an obvious place they can upgrade. There's the connection that the superstar player has made. And to your point, you know, when Bryce Harper speaks, people listen. It fills such a role. It fills such a hole in this team in multiple ways. You could lead him off. You could put Schwarber in more of a run producing spot, or you could continue to lead Schwarber off and have Trey Turner bat too. So you could go lefty Schwarber, righty Turner, lefty Harper, righty Realmuto. You know, it improves the defense and it makes you better as a base running team. And he's a really consistent offensive player, man. He hits for high average, hits a lot of doubles. It's for a lot of power. The thing with Trey Turner is, like, if you're the Dodgers, why wouldn't you try to re-sign him? You know, they have seemingly unlimited funds. Like, if they offer him $350 million over 10 years, you know, is he going to take that? The Phillies do have a lot of money coming off the payroll, though. Like, I wrote this article today at NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com. So you have between Gene Segura and Didi Gregorius, who, you know, he has been gone for months, but now his contract is officially expired. Those two guys alone free up $30 million, okay? Then you add on the other guys who become free agents, like a Corey Knebel and Gibson and Syndergaard and David Roberts and Brad Hand, Jeurys Familia, all these guys, $75 million gets freed up, okay? That is more than enough to sign a superstar player like Trey Turner and to fill a couple holes in the rotation. And when you think about how this team has spent over the years, John Middleton said for, you know, several years, when we feel that there's an opportunity to really make a run, that's when we're going to exceed the luxury tax. They did that this past offseason, and then they made a run, I would think would only embolden them to spend more. So, yeah, I think that this is going to be a pretty exciting offseason for Phillies fans.
I can't wait. I can't wait. Last name I'm going to throw at you is Jacob DeGrom. I mean, I don't know why my hunch tells me he's just going back to New York anyway, but what's your feeling on DeGrom?
I don't see it. Maybe like a, you know, Carlos Rodon of the Giants could be a guy, you know, high level pitcher that you could potentially go after. But like at no point in this process have I thought that Jacob DeGrom would be coming to the Phillies. I guess anything's possible.
Right.
It just seems like he'll return to the Mets. Anything can happen. But, I haven't really thought about that until this very conversation. Anybody would love to have a guy like that. It's really going to be fascinating to see what kind of contract he gets, because he's amazing when he's on the field, but there's also the perception has only grown over the last couple of years that he can't stay healthy. That, you know, is this guy a real true horse in the Max Scherzer sense or even the Zach Wheeler sense these days? So that'll be very interesting to see. But the Mets also, you think about that, right? The Mets just signed Edwin Diaz. They're closer to a 5-year contract to come back. They're going to be desperate. You know, they spent all that money last offseason, had a great year, spent most of the year in first place, didn't finish in first place, were one and done, you know, in the playoffs. So they're going to be aggressive this offseason, them and the Braves. And the Phillies got to make moves to you know, because you can't just assume that because you made the World Series this year that it's going to be the same next year. Mm-hmm. Throughout our lifetimes, right, I think back to the 2004 Eagles. I was never more certain that a team was going back the next year than when that team lost in the Super Bowl. But it can go sideways for a lot of different reasons.
Certainly. All right, let's get down to the nitty-gritty now. Do you look for, as a huge soup guy, like you love your soup, do you look forward to the winter months more than ever? And like when it's a fall day, like it was on this Monday that we taped this interview and it's like 90 degrees outside, are you like super disappointed that you don't get like your prime, like you lose a prime soup day essentially in prime soup season? No?
It's a very good point. There are trade-offs in life every day, you know, good weather, but you lose a good soup day. I will say I appreciate the wintertime for that reason. Mostly because I'm a big, you know, Uber Eats, Grubhub kind of guy.
Oh, okay.
And there isn't as much of a soup selection in the summer. You know, you're really limited. So like today I had a nice pasta fagioli. Did I say that right?
You did very good. Okay, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a cup of that earlier, but in fact, I might have a second cup after we finish.
Oh, you work up an appetite talking baseball. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
That's great. Guys, if you weren't following Corey Simon, and I'm sure you were already, but if you weren't, what are you doing with your life? That's all I ask. All right. Follow Corey Simon there on the old social media on Twitter. Phillies Talk Podcast does a phenomenal job with it. I've referenced the show a number of times on this program that he does with, of course, Jim Salisbury. And make sure you guys give him a follow there on Twitter, or reading all his stuff on the My Teams app and NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com. Corey, till we speak again, my friend, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Farzi. My pleasure.
Absolutely. Corey Simon joining us on the Rothman Orthopedics. Corey Simon right there. He loves his soup, folks. There are stories people tell of the soups that Soupy Sides, Corey Simon, has crushed. There's him and Phillies producer Sean Kane. First off, two of the nicest people you could ever come across. I don't know who's done this, and I think I've told the story before, but Corey has sat down and had three soups in one sitting, as has Sean Kane. I'll stick with Corey here because he's our guest. Our desks were rather close to one another at you worked next to me at NBC, and we'd get to talking and whatever. Hey, what are you doing? Doing this? Okay, what are you doing tonight? He's like, I'm just you know, sit down, you know, watch the game tonight, and I got, you know, order some food, couple soups, you know, have a good night. And I was like, a couple soups? And he's like, oh yeah, I'll order a couple soups. I really like soups. And I was like, I have never ordered, or in one sitting, had more than a soup. And he was like, oh no. He's like, I like a nice chicken noodle. I like a nice pasta fagioli, right? A little pasta fagioli, right? If you're being proper. And then he's like, I like a nice bisque, a nice hearty bisque. And I was like, all at one time, like you'll sit down and you'll have that. And like a sandwich on top of it. He's like, oh yeah. And I'm like, first off, the party doesn't need to happen with that many flavors, that many different textures in your mouth with the soup. Second, who has the time, ladies and gentlemen, to like, that's a lot of soup. That's a lot of like that. Oh, hot. I guess by the last one, it's cooled off. I think about this way too much, but that's how my mind operates. Again, it's Family Guy brain. But the man loves his soup. How about Manscaped? That's a transition. What's up with Manscaped? I'll tell you what's up with Manscaped. I'll tell you what's up with Manscaped. Manscaped.com, 20% off and free shipping from Manscaped. Manscaped.com. We'll use promo code Farzi at Manscaped.com. Join 4 million men worldwide who use Manscaped, especially their Platinum Package 4.0. Platinum Package 4.0, which includes their amazing lawnmower and also their weed whacker ear and nose hair trimmer. And they both come with skin-safe technology that helps reduce the risk of nicks so you can manscape with confidence and comfort. That's why you got to trust Manscaped, like 4 million men worldwide. And they're insane, absolutely insane deal. 20% off with promo code Farzi. How about Freestone Farms CBD? FreestoneFarmsCBD.com. If you're looking to try CBD, if you use CBD but not very pleased with your CBD, try Freestone Farms CBD. Give them a chance. You get 20% off with promo code Farzi. 20% off promo code Farzi at Freestone Farms CBD. You'll enjoy their tropical tasting Bay Oxa clocks in at a chart topping 24.1%. And their super CBD, which is half Hindu
Kush.
And 21%. Genetics of these guys are off the charts. So, ladies and gentlemen, you should give Freestone Farms CBD a chance. It's good for anyone looking to take a more natural approach to everything that they put in their body. So, please, by all means, enjoy Freestone Farms CBD and 20% off from FreestoneFarmsCBD.com. Ladies and gentlemen, how about this? How about the incredible people at Mojo? Download the Mojo app to your phone right now. Stocks rise and fall throughout the NFL season. When looking at players and their share prices, think a rookie is about to break out onto the scene? Buy low now, sell high later. Use all these players as if they're stocks with share prices attached to their name. They have over 300 players in the NFL of skilled positions, from quarterbacks to wide receivers, from tight ends to running backs, all available on the Mojo app. Download the Mojo app to your phone right now. Let the games begin with Mojo.
Must be 21 or older and present in New Jersey to trade on Mojo. Use Mojo and let the games begin. And also $10,000 of share price is available right now at Mojo when you check out Mojo at Mojo.com. Must be 21 or older. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. How about PHL Sports Station, Philadelphia Sports Station, enhancing your Philadelphia sports fan experience across all social media and blogs? That's PHLSportsStation.com. Let's jump into the chat check, see how you beautiful people are doing on this fine morning. Oh, we got a poll question going, courtesy of PJ. How will you remember this Phillies team? Fondly or indifferent? Fondly. I will definitely go with fondly. And that's in the lead with 83% of the vote. Lincoln's Hawk. Great name. Phillies in 9. All right. Morning, April. She leads us off. Good morning, April. Sean Gillespie, good morning. Mally. What's up, Mally? Nice to see you. Sean, everyone say hello. April saying hello. Everyone say hello. April, Mark, go to Starbucks. Order a medicine ball. It is magical and will help your cough. A medicine ball. Medicine ball. So here's where we're at in the household right now with the kids. And my man Ari, the Cardinals fan who listens to the show, he was identifying April the same as you were. With the fact that kids are just germ factories and everyone gets sick once the kid gets sick. My daughter started coughing and it was like the distinct cough where it was like, oh, she didn't have something, in her throat. It was just coughing like, oh, she's sick now. This is great. Now we're all going to be sick. Here's where it's evolved. My daughter might have pink eye. She might have pink eye. There's maybe some hints at pink eye late in the day yesterday. So now we're all going to get pink eye. That's where we're at right now in this household. Good times. It evolves. Nature finds a way. Anyway, all right. But thank you, April. I'll give it a shot. Mally, Mark, got to do this. Clean his bong and change the water. Oh, Mally, thank you. I haven't cleaned my bong since college. I always used to laugh when my roommates would clean their ginormous bongs in college. Old tattoo hair of Duck Rivers. Sean, you're the first tattoo hair reference of the... That's the first clip we've played of Doc Rivers. And Mally, you're the first reference of tattooed hair. April, I believe the kids are gross. I agree. There's no denying it. Ray Fitzgerald, why does Tucker get all his playing time over Harrell? Harrell, I think, can put up better numbers. I don't know. I think there's just some better grit. I don't know. Harold's got grit too. I want to see what Tucker's got. I'd rather ride that out. Maybe Harold eventually doesn't come off the bench. Maybe he gets a little bit more minutes than Tucker in a lot of those situations. But I want to see where they go with Tucker. I actually agree with Doc Rivers on giving more minutes to Tucker last night. And how about this, Paul Reed, your official backup setter, getting backup minutes again last night. Lincoln's Hawk, there it is. Ray Fitzgerald, you don't see defense in the NBA till playoff time. That's true. Ray Fitzgerald, Eflin be an okay number five. I don't necessarily disagree with that. I do know that Dave Dombrowski, like one of the first people that I remember him gushing over when he took over baseball ops for the Phils was Zach Eflin and what Zach Eflin brings to the table. James Heenan. Welcome, James. We need a first baseman that can field and that can hit consistently. I agree with that. Who is that? Because even the Anthony Rizzo, he had a lower batting average last year. I believe he had a lower on base percentage last year. And I believe he had fewer home runs than Rhys Hoskins as well. He is a gold glove first baseman, though. He played 40 games of first base for the Yankees last year. Now, he didn't win a gold glove last year, but I'm just saying he still plays. Still plays first base. Sean Gillespie, much soup facts. Another fact about soup, high salt content. Now you know, and knowing is half the battle. G.I. Joe. I say that all the time as a kid. My parents are like, what are you doing? I'm like, I just thought I should jump off the chair. What? Well, that's dangerous. Well, now I know. And knowing is half the battle. What? What did he just say? I think it's from that program he's watching. Anyway, PJ, I wouldn't be able to walk after multiple soups. It really is nuts. It really is. Soup is a lot more filling, like, because it's all liquid. You know, you're drinking like a bunch of water with like meat in it. Like, no thanks. I like a nice stew. A stew's a fine meal. I don't know if I ever told you guys about this before, but there's a soup that you make with like escarole, like escarole. For those that don't know, like the Italian wedding soup, the leaves in there, the green in there is called escarole, right? And there's a stew that I grew up with called minestro, whatever. And it is the heartiest, most delicious. It's got spicy Italian sausage, beans, scroll, little bits of bacon. You fry that up all nice. You throw that in the soup, the stew, whatever. Nice big hunk of like calabrese bread or like a nice hearty Italian bread. Little locatelli, pecorino romano. Oh, oh, it's the best thing ever. My wife made something similar to it a couple of weeks ago. It was fantastic. Toots just kills it on the soups. But anyway. Thanks to everybody in the chat. Check. You guys are great as per usual. We're going to move on to the morning rush. Brought to you by Sky Motorcars, skymotorcars.com. Sixers back at it, like I said, Thursday night against the Hawks. 7:30 tip off in Hotlanta. Joel Embiid. I wanted to make sure I got this in. Joel Embiid last night on his performance, as well as how their season officially starts right now. So the Sixers, in essence, are 1-0 on the post Phillies Sixers season.
I was okay. I didn't shoot well from the field. Under 50%, so I just got to get back to myself and, you know, be aggressive. But as a team, I thought we missed a lot of, you know, easy shots and a lot of wide open shots. But defensively, we were pretty good. Tonight, our season started tonight, so the Phillies are done. So I enjoy watching them. So our season started tonight. The other games don't count.
Yeah, I'm there for it. All right, 1-0, post Phillies and Joel Embiid in the lineup. Sixers, not 5-6, 1-0, making a note of it. Flyers back at it tonight against the Blues at home, 7 o'clock, the 7 o'clock puck drop, looking to win their second in a row. Indianapolis Colts, what are you doing? You're serious? First off, as someone, I do love and appreciate Frank Reich. Frank Reich, I think his ultimate failure was not being able to fix Carson Wentz. Not being able to win with Carson Wentz. Choking down the stretch last year with Carson Wentz. I think ultimately was like, all right, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't have traded. We're not going to fire you. We're not going to fire you. We're not going to fire you, Frank Reich. We're going to give you another year. So they bring him back another year. They give him another veteran quarterback in Matt Ryan. That goes ass up. That was terrible. Matt Ryan's not even playing anymore. And that happened. Now they fired Frank Reich and hired Jeff Saturday. Jeff Saturday, who's been at ESPN for like, what, 5-6 years now, if not longer? And all of a sudden, like, the guy was breaking down the NFL at ESPN like 2 days ago. And according to Jeff Saturday, it escalated quickly. The conversation escalated very quickly to him now being the interim head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. Jeff Saturday, who has less experience than Doug Peterson did when Doug Peterson took over the Philadelphia Eagles, because at least Doug got the title of offensive coordinator after he had coached in high school. Jeff Saturday's only experience coaching high school. Now is the I'll tell you what they're doing. First off, it doesn't make any sense, but this is what they're doing. They went with a name that the Colts fans love, Colts fans appreciate. That's it. It's an audition for 8 games. Jeff Saturday said as much yesterday during his press conference. But I was thinking, what would have been better than hiring Jeff Saturday in a very facetious, sarcastic sense? Here's my top three after Jeff Saturday. All right? Here's my top three. Number one. Matt Ryan. Might as well just have him be the coach. He's there already. You're the head coach now, Matt Ryan. You're not doing anything else. Nah. There you go. You're the head coach. Number two, Pat McAfee. I just enjoy the hell out of Pat McAfee. And he's the only guy that would have less sleeves on the sideline. He would have less sleeves on the sideline than Bill Belichick. So Pat McAfee, another fan favorite there in Indianapolis. So why not? All right. So I got Matt Ryan. I got Pat McAfee. Last name. I need one more guy. Who's one more? Peyton Manning. But here's the deal. I don't know if the Colts have another Monday night game coming up or anything like that. He would still do Manning cast from the sideline. He would still do Manning cast with Eli. He'd be on headset. He'd call plays in one headset, in one microphone, and then he'd flip that down, and then talk about what an idiot the head coach is of the Colts, and then he'd go back and call the play, and then he'd go back to the Manning cast and, like, interview Jalen Hurts or something, and then he'd go away, and then he'd come back and he'd interview, I don't know, Obama, and then he'd come back and call a play. Those are the three people that I think would have been better choices. Matt Ryan, Pat McAfee, and Peyton Manning, but the clause in the contract is Peyton Manning still does Manning cast as he calls plays for the Indianapolis Colts. Jeff Saturday would be fourth on that list. One name I did see was D'Amico Ryans. Now that's a serious candidate right there. Now the defensive coordinator. Former Eagles linebacker, as we all know. D'Amico Ryans, now the defensive coordinator of the 49ers. Interesting. Interesting. Chip Kelly used to call him Mufasa. There you go. So that's just who I think would do great. Speaking of football, Saints lost again last night. They lost to the Baltimore Ravens. So the Saints dropped to 3-6 on the season. And as we all know, the Philadelphia Eagles own the Saints' first round pick. So, dear Saints, keep on sucking. There you go. That's the Morning Rush brought to you by Sky Motor Cars, skymotorcars.com. Hope you guys have a wonderful rest of your Tuesday and all that. If you're going out to vote, be safe. Do what you do. Let's do America right. Yeah? All right. Anyway, have a great rest of your day, everybody. It's Mark Farzetta. The belated birthday boy, Jim Hyden, produced the program, did a wonderful job. My thanks to Corey Steinman for joining us, breaking down all things Phillies. This is a Buzz Sports Entertainment production. My name is Mark Farzetta from the Steven Singer Studios. Have a great rest of your day, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow. See ya.